Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to Seriously, the New Statesman podcast that takes pop culture seriously.
I'm Caroline Crampton.
And I'm Anna Leskovich. This week, we're talking about the Netflix series Maniac and the Channel 4 reality show, The Circle.
We've also been listening to the Dr. Death podcast, so we'll be talking about how that went later in the show.
Hello.
Hello.
Welcome back to another episode of Seriously. I'm feeling well rested and ready to devour some culture after a week of pretty much only reading books in Italy.
Oh, nice.
And we did one group watch of Call Me By Your Name because you have
to. I did wonder if you'd done that.
Yeah, we did. Yes. I've seen that movie so many times now. I went to bed just before things start to get sad. I was like, I've been through this too many times now. I just don't want to watch him cry in the car. I actually can't bear to see him cry in the car. I'm going to go to bed.
There are several films I feel like that where I watch about 60% of them because, I mean, I know how it ends. I just don't want to see it again, you know?
Thing is, I have watched the end a lot. I was tired and I couldn't face it. But yeah, apart from that, just reading, which is nice, but not something I do enough of outside of holiday relax zone. No, I'm currently halfway through Fingersmith, which is,
oh, I love that book. Yeah,
compelling enough to mean that I'm continuing to actually read properly since I've got back.
I'm very excited about, there's a film adaptation of my favourite Sarah Waters novel coming out really soon. The Little Stranger. Have you read that one?
I haven't read that one, but I want to, because am I right in thinking that it's being directed by Lenny Abrahamson?
Yes, it is.
I really liked Room, and I spoke to him recently on the phone for an interview I was doing about Sally Rooney, and he was really nice. And my boyfriend was in the room while I was doing it, and he was like, I can't believe you didn't ask him about The Little Stranger. And I'm like, well, that's completely irrelevant to the piece I'm writing and not what I told him I would ask him about. But he was just like, you know, it's so interesting that he's doing, you know, that'll be the third sort of contemporary-ish novel adaptation he's done by women in the last like 3 years. And so yeah, he's an interesting director, I think, and I'm really loving this Sarah Waters book, which is the first Sarah Waters book I've ever read, so definitely going to go for The Little Stranger next and then try and catch the movie. Also, I love Ruth Wilson and she's in the movie.
Yeah, she's the main character in it. Yeah, I'm so excited about it. I remember when I first finished reading it, it's the kind of book where I immediately went online, was like, what does ending mean? Give me definitive closure, even though that is not what the novel wants. And I found loads of great theories, but I also found a Q&A with Sarah Waters where she'd been asked this, and she was like, I don't mean it to have a definitive ending.
That's the whole point.
You know, think whatever you think. So I'm fascinated to see how they do that in film version.
Okay, exciting. Anyway, not what we're doing on Seriously this week, just a tantalating taster perhaps for future episodes. In fact, this week we're going to be talking about the Netflix series Maniac. Maniac is a 10-part Netflix drama based on a Norwegian TV series of the same name. This remake stars Emma Stone and Jonah Hill as Annie Landsberg and Owen Milgram, two people with mental health issues who end up in a clinical trial for a drug that purports to be able to solve all their problems instantly with no side effects. And it's set in kind of a strange dystopian... I've seen a lot of comparisons to Black Mirror, even though it's not immediately what it made me think of, but a kind of dystopian futuristic society, though it's also filled with all this like retro tech. So it's kind of like a weirdly timeless and creepy. And it's a world where it feels to me like this show is kind of laced with a critique of late capitalism, not to get too, I don't know, woke socialist bro about things. But it's a world in which there's like job stability seems very poor and people are doing weird things like being a friend proxy, which means, you know, that you go and pretend to be someone's friend for an hour in a sort of like app-based service, or you can make extra money by having someone follow you around all day reading adverts out to you. And there's like a temporary volunteer husband service you can do for people whose husbands have like left
or died.
So it's kind of that's the kind of context that leads these two people who are financially very insecure taking this quite risky seeming drug trial, which is kind of like a combination of pills and computers working on your brain.
Yeah, you get sort of strapped into a pod, almost Matrix style, but then also there are pills that you take, and yeah, it's really weird and it unfolds quite slowly, I think. So I didn't really properly understand what was happening until maybe episode 3.
Yeah, they're deliberately kind of withholding information from you, and as you say, there's no, the plot is not, doesn't feel very momentum filled. It's just kind of stuff is unfolding. It's not like super tense, or you're not propelled through it in that way. It's just kind of happening at sometimes a slightly excruciating pace.
Yeah, and for that reason, I during the first episode I was thinking like, is this bad, do I like this? But I got into it quite soon after that, and actually I realized that it was just my brain like slowing down to its pace. I'm so used to now everything, whether it's got like, whether it's an actual whodunit or not, almost having the pacing of a whodunit, where you get little plot crumbs all the way through and it sort of keeps you wanting to, what keeps you wanting to watch essentially. This is just, I don't know, its whole vibe was like, you know, watch if you want, watch if you don't, we'll still be here. Which I actually really like, but I just had to tune into.
Yeah, totally. And I think the performances for me, I think after I finished watching the first episode, I said something like, well, that was quite depressing and I don't actually enjoy the feeling of feeling depressed. And the first episode is very much from the perspective of Owen, the Jonah Hill character.
Yes.
And Jonah Hill delivers this like incredibly wounded, passive performance. It's like an extreme passivity, which is often kind of like played for laughs. So, you know, someone will try and have a joke with him and he'll respond in this really deadpan, removed from the situation way that is funny, but also like it's deeply depressing to see someone who's like that miserable and that unable to kind of like interact in a genuine way with the world around them. But it is a really fantastic performance. I think he has a really good balance of like showing you the kind of wounds that this character has in a way that, you know, sometimes can be funny, but also just really does give you a sense of the kind of pain in his life and how serious his mental health problems are. And he's paranoid and potentially schizophrenic and just having a really, really difficult time of it, potentially suicidal. I do think the performance is brilliant. And the second episode focuses a bit more on Emma Stone's character, Annie, and you get more of her backstory. And I think she's just incredible in this. And she's like doing weird stuff with her jaw. She's like jutting her jaw out in these, like, makes her seem really petulant and defensive. But also, again, you can see that this is a person who is like wearing the fact that they are carrying trauma quite obviously on them. Yeah, so they're two people. I think they both sort of describe themselves as kind of broken people. So aside from the financial motivation for doing this trial, there is a real sense that like actually these are people who really want to be, quote, fixed if they can be. And I think Emma Stone's character Annie sometimes says something like, well, I don't deserve to be at points. But behind all that, she does really want to kind of have an easier time of it. So I do think that although I immediately found kind of the bleakness of it a bit off-putting, I'm suddenly quite invested in these characters actually finding some sort of relief and healing themselves in some way.
It's also directed by Kari Joji Fukunaga, who's just been announced as the new James Bond director now that Danny Boyle has dropped out, which I think has led to this series maybe getting a bit more attention than it would have done otherwise, just because, you know, people are interested to see what his latest work is and all that kind of thing. He also directed some of True Detective, I think, which I've not seen. I don't know if you have.
No, I haven't either.
But I did think that, well, my impression of what I've seen is that this is quite a directed show, if that makes sense. The performances are great, as you said. And I do think Emma Stone did an amazing job of making herself completely other than she has been maybe in some of her more recent films, which is possibly why she was interested in doing this. I don't know. But I don't know, just from the way the kind of quasi dystopian world is lighted to everything else about it, it just felt very like it came from a single vision.
Yeah, and it's visually extremely compelling and very dense as well, and there's lots of like things in shots that can catch your eye, like there's a lot of quite intrusive advertising things, which is obviously trying to help you understand the kind of economic and societal context that the kind of alternate reality of the show is existing within. But also it's just kind of, it's just quite immersive because you're like, oh, what's that kind of book on the table? Or why is that pill in the shape of a letter? And there are like just lots of details that, like, even at one point, like a group of tourists go past the statue of Extra Liberty. And you're like, those details do just make the show more like compelling and make you more fascinated about what is actually happening here and what time it is and why this society is functioning in this way. And I think it's really cleverly done because it's not as some shows like Black Mirror and other shows can be. It doesn't feel to me too whacking you over the head with a message.
No, it doesn't feel that kind of super on the nose, this is a comment about today
type no thing. It's just like, here's a weird world and here's a man sort of having sex with a kind of weird 80s looking octopus, you know, computer game, stuff like that. It's just, and it's, you know, a lot of those details are just meant to be funny and just meant to give you a little bit of character insight and stuff like that. So it's not all about saying to you like, oh, this is a terrible comment on society. A lot of it is just about making it a more enjoyable and more compelling watch. So I think it really succeeds in that area.
Yeah, for sure. It actually strongly reminded me of an episode of a podcast I really like that deals with imaginary near futures called Flash Forward, in which they actually did an episode about a future in which you could sign up to have adverts be part of your daily life, where you would get paid to mention products IRL to your friends and family, and a sort of Google Home-esque device would tell when you'd done it and give you money accordingly. So like, basically you could never be sure that anything anyone said to you wasn't SponCon.
That's really funny.
And so yeah, as soon as I saw the advert thing, I was like, oh right, yeah, Rose from Flash Forward was completely on this. But yeah, that's exactly the feeling it has, is like a kind of, rather than the Black Mirror thing of what if phones but too much, it's more like, what if we just stepped sideways into a very similar but also profoundly different reality.
Yeah, and I think there's a core message in this show that is very, you could quite easily, like Black Mirror or something else, mock it, because I have a feeling, and I've only watched the first 3 or 4 episodes, and I have a feeling like the kind of head of the clinical trial says, you know, I just want an elegant way to fix people. I've simply found an elegant way to fix people. And, you know, very much it's already being flagged to me that this trial is not going to be the elegant way to fix people that it thinks it is. But ultimately, I think what is, you know, I haven't watched it, so hopefully this isn't a spoiler, but I think ultimately what the program is going to try and tell us is that you might not find the answers in a clinical trial, but, you know, if you make a really genuine connection with somebody, that's like the first step to combating loneliness and lots of other kind of like difficult you know, and acknowledging guilt and other traumas, finding other people who've also gone through similar things, and just the idea that like community can help people and bonds of friendship can help people and, you know, important relationships can help people. That's like obviously a very cheesy and kind of like simple message that would be very easy to mock. But for some reason, I'm feeling already quite moved by what it's saying and feeling quite like, yeah, I really hope that these people find what they need. And I don't know what stops something from being purely embarrassing and when something becomes moving. But for me, this is kind of succeeding so far.
Mm. Yeah, I'm excited to keep watching it. I think it's really interesting. One of the most surprising things I've seen in a while, actually.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Now we're going to talk about The Circle, which is a Channel 4 reality show focused on social media. The contestants live in adjacent flats but never meet face to face, interacting instead through a fake app called The Circle. They are free to play as themselves or as a character they've invented, but their every move and the way others react to it determines whether they remain in the game or get blocked. There's a lot of language that we associate with social media otherwise in this show as well. You know, you can be deemed an influencer mm-hmm. or not an influencer. Mm-hmm. And the first episode focuses, when I was watching it, I was like, why am I watching people like set up their Facebook accounts? This is bizarre. You know, they had to choose a profile picture and then write a bio and all of this kind of thing. But it does move on from that into actual game playing and interaction.
Mm-hmm. And the game playing is an interesting word because I feel like game playing is a term that became so loaded in Big Brother. You know, he's playing a game was like the ultimate insult that you could say to anyone in Big Brother. And this is a similar thing where you've kind of got authentic contestants versus game playing contestants. Game playing mm-hmm. contestants who are here to rig the rules so that they win, not just, you know, be themselves and... which is, again, like a weird and loaded and simultaneously meaningless phrase, like just be yourself, but because we're all performing all the time. But yeah, it's an interesting kind of dichotomy between the people who are like faking something in some way. So whether that's like pretending to be a completely different person or like there's one guy who's gay who's pretending to be straight.
There's someone else as well who's like themselves but saying that their job is being a doctor.
Yes.
So some people like augment their existing personality and then some people do just create a whole different avatar essentially.
And then there are some people who are like, oh no, I'm just gonna quote be myself. Yeah. So yeah, right from the beginning it's kind of like the catfishers versus the genuine authentic people, which is quite an interesting premise. And I suppose the premise is trying to sort of make points about what you can or can't believe on social media, whether it does that successfully or not is up to the viewers to decide. But it's a slightly strained version of social media just inherently because of the format. It's not like you're seeing all your friends and family. You know, it is
false.
Yeah, it's kind of just by the rules of the game, it's inherently a little bit different to how we normally live our lives on social media. But it, as you say, is a game, and it finished last night and someone did win. And I assume we're going to go spoilery on this because as it's a reality TV show, it's mostly covered in the press, regardless of whether or not you're watching it live.
Yeah, so I did watch the last episode, and
it was a live finale, wasn't it, as well, which is
it was live, yeah. Interestingly, the person who won, and I am going to say who it is now, so spoiler if you're watching this, was one of the catfishers. It was Alex, who was pretending to be Kate, mm-hmm. and yeah, he won.
It's quite interesting though, because I think for a lot of people, it was kind of an empty win, a win free of sort of genuine victory, because the way that he managed to win was that one contestant, basically the voting system works, I think you could award the other contestants stars based on how much you liked them, and how much you wanted them to win. And most of the other contestants in that final rated him very low scores because they knew something was up and that he was potentially playing a game. Apart from one guy called Dan, who gave Alex 5 stars, or who he thought was Kate 5 stars, because he was, I think, kind of falling for Kate.
He's the estate agent guy.
Yeah. And he, you know, he was a very kind of genuine character on the show, and really, really likable, and people were really backing him. He gave Kate/Alex 5 stars. Kate/Alex won off the back of that, basically. And I think I've seen a lot of calls for Alex to share some of his winning money with Dan, who he kind of like heartlessly tricked throughout the show. So I don't know. It's a funny one, because I think whether or not that seems like a realistic situation. I mean, we've all seen Catfish. We know that these things do happen, but whether or not that is the kind of commentary that we're really looking for on the current social media era or not is, I don't know. For me, I'm not sure that that's really as insightful as it perhaps thinks it is.
Yeah, no, I don't like the show at all as like a comment on how everyone's fake on social media or anything. So I am kind of in two minds about actually the success of the show. I think what they should have focused completely on just making a good game show, and worried less about that. So for instance, I thought it was a bit odd that they made them all move into adjacent flats, even though
I'm sure that was very expensive to do as well.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, I was a bit surprised about that, because otherwise this format is super cheap, because you don't have to have, you know, sets or a presenter or anything. It's all just people using computers and a voiceover. Mm-hmm. So I was a bit surprised that they chose to then spend money on everyone living in this flat. But
I suppose if they have if they're meant to be doing it from their own homes and they are catfishing, it would be very hard to, like, you'd have to try and like invent a fake home and like imagine what that person's house would look like. And
yeah, I suppose they were maybe doing it to sort of like clean the background completely, and therefore almost encourage people to present themselves differently. Mm-hmm. But just from a viewer point of view, I think it would have been more fun if they'd had to do it as part of their own lives.
Yeah. Yeah, no, you know, it's true. And they have to, if you're lying about what you look like, you have to conceal it. So it would just be an extension of that, I guess. But yeah, the finale is extremely watchable, and that moment where Dan and Alex meet for the first time, and Dan's expecting to see this Kate walk through the door, and it's someone completely different, and he's like, wait, are you Freddy? And then he's like, no, I'm Kate. And he's like, what? And he refuses to shake his hand, and he's clearly like genuinely really upset. And that's, you know, maybe ethically a little bit dubious, but what reality show does not involve upsetting contestants in some form? It is just quite an incredible moment of TV.
Yes, and I did find myself wondering to what extent the producers manipulated it in order to get that outcome, because there weren't that many catfishes.
No.
in the show. There was only, I think, one other person who just played a full-on separate character. Sinead played a, like, 60-year-old man.
Mm.
But all the others, mostly it was, like, themselves, but a modified version. So you wouldn't have got that blinding moment of revelation. It was, like, me, but I don't have kids, or me, but I'm younger.
Mm,
or,
totally.
As you say, me, but I'm straight, or whatever.
Yeah, it really, for the shock factor, you really needed a win like that, which is interesting. It also, this show's finale kind of comes in a week where I feel like reality TV is just in turmoil.
Mm.
In Strictly, there's like a big controversy of, I know we have some American listeners who probably won't have a clue what we're talking about, but there's a big, like, Dancing with the Stars style TV show over here in which there's a very high profile affair that's been in the tabloids, and presumably they'll have to leave the show. I don't know. And, like, Big Brother's essentially ended in the midst of, like, its biggest controversy ever. And it's like the show just can't continue because that controversy was so big, in which basically a male contestant jokingly sort of punched the arm of a female contestant. She was sort of fine about it at first and then got really upset about it and she asked to be put in a different room for her safety. And then the public really, really hated her and vilified her and really, really came out in support of this guy who had seemingly not intentionally tried to upset her at all. And, you know, I saw, like, people tweeting, like, who work on the show, like, wish I could say more about this, but I can't. And, like, people who used to work with the woman were, like, saying she's awful. And then he won. And the Big Brother's just never going to do another series. Just collapsed under the weight of it.
Bizarre. After all of the stuff that's happened on Big Brother, it is this that brings it down. But then I think I also saw people saying this as well, that, like, you know, it's not had great ratings for a while. It moved from Channel 4 to Channel 5 because Channel 4 didn't want to make it anymore.
Yeah.
You know,
it's more
possible
they
were just
worth.
Looking for a reason.
It's just more trouble than it's worth, perhaps, at this point for Channel 5.
I think perhaps it is, yeah. But yeah, I don't know that The Circle is going to be stepping in to become the new Big Brother. Although it did have some similarities to, because I was really into Big Brother when it first was on, the first few series. And obviously they made an homage to it in their choice of narrator, who was Sarah from Bolton. Was that also Sophie from Bolton? You know, like, strong sort of regional accent, just like the original Big Brother voice and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And also just the, like, the decor of the flats and stuff felt very Big Brother-y in a way. But maybe it's just all reality TV is like Big Brother now.
Yeah, but, and it's also part of, like, the goggle boxification, I think, of reality TV, in that it's like, as we said, it's not their own homes, but it's very much a setup where it's like filming people doing everyday activities, not in the Big Brother sense of, like, we'll put loads of people in a mundane setting and see how they all respond to each other, but more in a, like, well, we all watch TV. Let's see what it's like to watch other people do that one really boring thing.
Yeah.
And it's slightly different because the great thing about Gogglebox and being the is it's so accessible because it shows you the clips of TV, so you've got the same level of access as the people talking about it, and then they all discuss it. This is a slightly trickier format to do because you have to, obviously, you can't recreate what it's actually like to be on social media, because, as we said, like, that would involve you having to know the backstory of, like, every individual relationship that these people are talking with on WhatsApp and whatever. Mm. And it's just way too complicated. So instead, you have to produce this very limited, okay, here are 8 people who have the ability to talk to each other for, you know, this amount of time a day, and we can, like, follow exactly what they're saying with each other and then cut to them behind the screen in one room and cut to them behind the screen in the other room.
Yeah.
So for me, it feels related somehow to Gogglebox and that kind of, like, let's see how relatable and accessible we can make it.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think that is kind of a response. I think it's also a response to YouTube in a way, in the sense that that is the place people go these days to watch the everyday lives of people they don't know. And I've always been completely fascinated by these moments because YouTubers kind of exist in little colonies, I think, you know, among their friends who are also YouTubers.
Yeah,
you see them collabing and hanging out. And often it's members of their extended family and friends of friends and stuff. And every so often you get a moment where, like, Zoe Sugg will walk down the stairs in her house filming with her vlog camera, and her boyfriend who lives with her, who is also a YouTuber, will be filming something in the kitchen. Mm. And, like, the two cameras will meet. And if you watch both vlogs, you'll, like, see each other from the other vlog's perspective. And they try not to do that as much as possible, because I think, like, they try not to show each other's cameras, because I think they know that it, like, breaks the fourth wall and sort of intrudes upon the, you know, it's just me and you and you're coming along on my day, what I'm doing vibe of the whole thing. But yeah, I am so fascinated by those moments. And the same thing happens on these people's Instagrams and stuff. Like, you can't help seeing sometimes the, like, behind the scenes of how they come to be filming each other and themselves, which is kind of fascinating, even if they don't actually mean to include that stuff.
It is fascinating.
So yeah, I do think The Circle is slightly riffing off that feeling of, like, you think you're seeing one thing and then, yeah, it cuts to the person behind the screen, essentially.
Well, it got really bad reviews the first episode. And then,
did it? Yeah. I didn't even look.
And now I think the people who've stuck with it have been like, actually, this was really good. So I haven't watched enough of it to sort of say whether I think it was great or not as a sort of experience of reality TV, you know, like Love Island or something. A few people I know have said that they felt like it was a mistake for the show to try and push it into a Love Island-y arena where there's lots of, like, fit people who kind of want to get off with each other, because actually the more interesting thing is, like, getting people who have different ages and backgrounds and stuff into one space and seeing how they interact with each other on social media and whether there's, like, an element of ageism in interactions or, you know, whatever.
Yeah, that is the far more interesting thing. The pre-interviews for this show must have been outrageous. Like, how do you determine whether someone is likely to be a successful catfisher?
Yeah, I don't know. It's true, it's a very hard casting process. But yeah, so I'm sure they'll do another series, and yeah, I'm interested to see what's going to fill some of the reality TV gaps that we've got at the moment. So last week, Caroline recommended a podcast to me, which was Dr. Death. Caroline, podcast expert, is the person who'll be able to tell you who it's made by.
It's made by Wondery, which is a big American podcast company and network. You might have heard of them if you've listened to a podcast called Dirty John that was super successful, which was kind of a true crimey podcast.
Yeah, in the same way that this is.
This is as well, yeah. But that one was sort of had like a sex focus, whereas this one obviously has a medical focus.
Yeah, and the thing with Dirty John was that it was about people that had not really had any media attention prior to that particular story. Yeah. And Dr. Death is a kind of true crime documentary about someone who did make headlines. So it's an interesting one, because there's a balance between you don't want to be given all the information too early on, but also the name Dr. Death and any of the kind of like immediate blurbing materials is going to let you know that this was a serious violent villain. So it's an interesting route in to the podcast, because I think what this podcast does a really good job is of maintaining that element of suspense whilst being fairly upfront about what's coming. And it is pretty gruesome, which we both said last week we were a little bit nervous about, but I didn't find it too bad, and I'm really squeamish.
I didn't either. I was expecting to find it more difficult. I think it's because they do structure it very much like serious documentary,
yeah,
that I felt like I could get over the, you know, descriptions of metal screws into people's spines and stuff like that.
I think the first episode, actually, so far I've listened to about four, was the worst for me, which it sort of begins describing three botched operations, and there's one bit where they're talking about just the sheer amount of blood in the operating theater that I was like, I actually, this is gross, don't like this. But apart from that, there's a lot more you know, less bloody discussions of how this man who, to all his patients and to most people he worked with, just seemed like, yeah, another doctor, how he managed to just destroy the lives of so many people. And that involves, you know, talking to former colleagues, talking to former friends and people who knew people he was in relationships with, and just getting a real picture of the person from lots of different sources. So for me, it manages to avoid just being a total salacious, horrible, grim, bloody gore fest that's just trying to kind of like be as horrible as possible. It is, it's kind of putting itself in a weird position somewhere between, like, you know, the great thing, I know that people talk about Serial all the time, and it's really boring for people who listen to a lot of podcasts, but the thing about Serial was that it was trying to be like both a personal story that is like scandalous and tabloidy, and a comment on like the justice system. And this is a similar thing where it's like both the story of this incredible villain who did all these murders and was like awful and have you ever heard anything like this since Jack the Ripper? But also like, wait, how did the medical system allow this to happen?
Yeah, that's the part that I got almost more gripped by, was when the host, Laura Bile, talks about, actually, there were several points when people kind of did know that this was going on, or should or could have known that this was going on, and they chose not to do anything. And as a result, you know, lots of people are now paralyzed, some people are dead, et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah, the like exposing of the injustice and the failures in the system becomes a plot in itself. I've just come back from a really interesting conference in the US called Third Coast, where I went to an amazing session about true crime podcasts, in which it was two Canadian journalists who made a podcast called Finding Cleo, which was about the disappearance and death of an Indigenous girl from the Saskatchewan province of Canada. And they were saying, actually, we wanted to make a social justice podcast, and we put the mystery element in so that people would listen to it.
Yeah, totally.
We wanted to make a show about the like structural oppressions that lead to far more Indigenous women and girls being kidnapped and murdered and suffering violence and stuff. But we knew that people wouldn't listen to it if we packaged it like that, so we put in a whodunit.
Totally. And I wouldn't buy that same rhetoric from the people who made Dr. Death, because like, it's called Dr. Death, and it's about like quite a famous sort of the kind of, you know, serial killer that we all want to hear about. He's like, oh, he's a sociopath, and how did he manage to hide his crimes for so long? Like, it's definitely your typical headline true crime story. It's just also done with the proper amount of sensitivity and kind of journalistic curiosity about that system that it becomes satisfying. Like, there are some bits that I find so kind of over the top, like at the end of, I think, the third episode or something, they read out a letter that he wrote where he's kind of being that serial killer character, and they put like all this echo on her voice, and then it's like the end of the episode, it's like the cliffhanger ending, and it's like so it's like, it is really over the top, but like also it's a crazy story, so they can obviously get away with it because they're not over egging the pudding. It is just like a really horrific, grim, crazy story.
It's been listened to millions of times as well. I think I saw something say it's only been out for like a month and it's been listened to 8 million times or something.
Yeah, and so, it's really addictive. I am definitely, you know, we always say, oh, maybe I'll keep listening on Seriously, but like, I already know that I'm going to listen to this like in the bath.
In the bath?
Yeah, for sure.
Somehow that seems wrong. I don't know.
Better than like while eating sushi, which was I was listening to it earlier and I was like, what?
No, you can't. You can't eat while you listen to this, I don't think. What are we going to do for next time?
So for next time, I don't know why I'm saying this, because this was 100% your idea and I'm going to blame you for it. Caroline wants to watch the first episode of Doctor Who to feature a female doctor. Jodie Whittaker now plays the Doctor, and it's been huge in the UK. People have been talking about it loads. I don't want to do this because my boyfriend has a running joke that I'm a massive Doctor Who fan, even though I haven't watched Doctor Who in like 8 years. So I'm really fueling the flames here of, Nick just absolutely every time. Like even last week or whenever it was on Saturday or whatever, Nick was like, so I assume that you want to watch Doctor Who pretty much at 6:45 p.m. sharp today. And I was like, no, I haven't watched Doctor Who for a decade. Please leave me alone. I hate this joke. But when I was at school, I was really into the Christopher Eccleston series of Doctor Who. When I was a child, which is the appropriate time to be interested in watching Doctor Who. Sorry, not to shame Doctor Who fans.
Controversial.
I know. Not to shame Doctor Who fans because, you know, it's seriously, we don't do that here. I just personally am no longer interested in watching Doctor Who. But I am interested in a female doctor. And we've had some crazy stats coming out about the viewing figures and stuff over the last few days, which I saw some stats that was like the last series of Doctor Who was watched by 379,000 young boys and like 112,000 young girls or something. Those figures are not completely accurate. I'm just like trying to remember roughly. And then the new Doctor episode that aired on Saturday night was watched by something like slightly less boys, like 320,000 boys or something, and like 335,000 girls. And like, so it's had loads of new viewers and a kind of more of a gender equilibrium in terms of how many girls are watching. So it's really exciting.
Yeah, I'm similarly interested in it for those reasons. I loved the Christopher Eccleston reboot. I enjoyed a lot of the David Tennant Doctor Who, and then I just fell off during the Matt Smith era when it all got a bit silly, in my opinion, or sillier. It's always been silly. And yeah, I tried watching one episode of Peter Capaldi and just couldn't handle it. And so I haven't watched Doctor Who for what, 2-3 series now, so I have no idea what's going on in the more general arc, not that I ever really did. But yeah, I'm interested in Jodie Whittaker as an actor, and I'm also interested in the context that has led to this, what has been for some people a very controversial casting, even though it probably shouldn't be. So for that reason, I want to give it a go.
Okay, well, we'll get back to you next week. Thanks for listening to this episode of Seriously, the pop culture podcast from The New Statesman.
If you enjoyed the show, why not subscribe to make sure you never miss another episode? We're available in all the usual places you get podcasts, including on Apple Podcasts, where you could leave us a rating and a review if you fancy. It makes us happy, and it also helps other people find the show.
If you'd like to come and see us in person, check out the events page of our website, seriouslypod.com/events. Details of our next pop culture quiz and anything else we're doing will appear there.
We're available many other places on the internet, including on Twitter, Facebook and Tumblr. We're Seriously Pod on all of them. Follow us to keep up with what we're up to or to chat to other listeners about things you've enjoyed on the show.
We love getting your recommendations for things we should feature on the show or hearing your thoughts on what we've already discussed. Get in touch on social media or email us on seriouslypod@gmail.com.
And if you feel strongly that more pop culture needs to be taken seriously, spread the word and tell your friends and family about the podcast.
Hey, y'all, Darius Rucker here. You know, a lot of people ask me, what inspires your music? And one of the big things is a strong sense of place. That's why I love my home state of South Carolina and want to share the awesome things it has to offer. From the beautiful mountains down to the sunny coast, it's got it all. Not to mention two of my personal favorites, great golf and amazing food. Come see why I love this place. Visit discoversouthcarolina.com.